Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And when Donald Trump made news last week by not knowing that Vladimir Putin has already invaded Ukraine, it kind of drowned out the fact that he didn't know the difference between Tim Kaine, Hillary Clinton's running mate, and Tom Kaine, the former Republican governor of New Jersey.
Her running mate, Tim Kaine, who, by the way, did a terrible job in New Jersey, first act he did in New Jersey was ask for a $4 billion tax increase, and he was not very popular in New Jersey, and he still is. What? Virginia.
Oopsie. As it turns out, Tom Kaine is in the news, too, right now for being in a bipartisan organization called Common Good that's launching a campaign to improve government by cutting through bureaucracy. The co-chair of the campaign is former Democratic senator from New Jersey, Bill Bradley. Bill Bradley and Tom Kaine both join me now. Senator Bradley, Governor Kaine, so great to hear from you both. Welcome back to WNYC.
Well, great to talk to you, Brian.
Governor, just for the record, you're not Hillary Clinton's running mate, are you?
Not last I heard.
Just making sure. Senator Bradley, I see the campaign is called Who's in Charge Around Here. Want to lay out the idea?
Yes. The idea is that we have a lot of talk about the problems we face as a country, but there's no coherent plan to fix Washington. And what we're trying to do is lay out a plan to fix Washington, because we're in a system where regulations have become so complex that it prevents things from happening. For example, just to, say, get something fixed on the Goethals Bridge took 10 years to do an environmental impact statement. And so this is an indication that something is broken and that we need to fix it.
Governor, why make bureaucracy the ultimate evil here? Sure, it's good if things are simple and as efficient as possible, and that's certainly an aggravating example that Senator Bradley just gave about things on the Goethals Bridge taking 10 years just for an EIS. But when we have slow economic growth and ISIS and polarization that's paralyzing the government, why spend your time on red tape as such a big deal?
Brian, it gets into almost everything we try to fix. You talk about jobs and the economy are very, very important. But look, both candidates are sort of implying we're going to have a big infrastructure program, similar, I guess, to Eisenhower's highway program, to get people back to work and get the infrastructure of this country repaired. If we do that, it's going to cost at least 30% more than it should. And it's rules and it's regulations, and it's the kind of thing that holds up a project for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years in some cases. And we can't do it in the way we want to do it unless we fix this problem, unless we fix regulations. You can go to healthcare, you can go in education, you can go in any of these areas which are very, very important, and we're paying enormous price in money, in time, in frustration. Because we're not going to address this problem.
Listeners, you have a rare opportunity here to speak to former Governor Tom Kaine, former Senator Bill Bradley, 212-433-WNYC. Anything you always wanted to ask either one of them but didn't have them over to dinner, 212-433-9692. And Governor, as a follow-up, candidates often run on their big spending plans or big tax cut plans that are very expensive and unrealistic, and they say they'll pay for them by cutting waste and fraud. And I don't think it's ever true that anybody pays for anything by cutting waste and fraud, because I guess there just isn't that much waste and fraud in government that attacking it can pay for big programs or big tax cuts. Unless you disagree with that, hasn't it been used as a red herring in that way?
If you interpret it only that way, Brian, but if you take it into common sense regulation, then that's what they should be talking about. Because, let's say, if you really want to fix health care, when we know that Obamacare did something but didn't do enough, and it's still got to be fixed in a number of ways, you can't fix it properly under the current system of rules and regulations and a lack of common sense in hospitals and in healthcare. And you know, when you and I go to the doctor, how much time do we spend filling out forms? 30%. Why is it the most expensive medical care in the entire country? It's because of this bureaucracy and rules and regulations, and they can be fixed.
And, Senator, setting up bureaucracy as a bogeyman is often a conservative tool because it demonizes government as not acting in the public interest, and then they take it from there to attack government in general as not a force for the common good. For you as a Democrat, is there also a liberal or progressive purpose that's served by going after bureaucracy?
Absolutely. If you believe government has an important role to play in people's lives, as I do, then you want government to actually make change. You want lives to be improved. And we get virtuous purpose mixed up with what works. And so what we need to do is we need to make sure that when we pass a law in Washington, a big infrastructure program, a healthcare law, education law, that it actually will have an impact on the ground and will not be delayed so long that you won't be able to get anything done. I mean, for example, I gave the example of Goethals Bridge, the same thing with Bayonne Bridge. When it was, when we had to raise it, it took 3 years just to get a beginning of an EIS. If you take a look at laws that have a budgetary impact, most of them are obsolete. The New Deal farm subsidies. In fact, somebody could say an American democracy is largely directed by dead people, meaning past members of Congress and regulators who wrote the laws and the rules that we still have to deal with today. We have to be able to look at a problem and determine whether we can fix it better than the current rules are. If we don't, we perpetuate people's distrust in government, and that breeds a kind of reaction against government that says get rid of all government. So if you want good government, you have to be willing to reform government.
Bill in Jackson Heights, you're on WNYC with Tom Kane and Bill Bradley. Hi, Bill.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to ask your guests if they had some specific regulations in mind that they would like to do away with.
At the federal level?
At the federal level, yes.
Senator Bradley, want to take a crack at that? Your examples so far have been local in terms of the bridges. How about a Washington thing?
Well, sure. I mean, I think we had New Deal farm subsidies that were put in place in the Depression, and they're still there. And I think they probably lost their usefulness by 1940, and they're now just a trough where special interests feed. I mean, the reality is we have to find ways to review the regulations.
That it's funny that you brought that up because you probably didn't hear it, but that was part of the topic of our last segment where we were talking about the defeat of Tea Party Congressman Tim Huelskamp in his primary. And one of his big things was that he was opposed to the farm bill and that that's a Tea Party priority to knock out the farm bill, and that food stamp funding, which more affects our area, is tied to the farm bill. So there was, you know, this isn't purely in a contemporary political sense a matter of corporate welfare. Any thought about that?
Sure. Well, I think there are probably a lot of other reasons he was defeated in Kansas, mainly that the governor was extremely unpopular in the state for what he's done in cutting the budget and cutting taxes.
Yes.
And it really impeded the education in the state of Kansas. He happened to be someone who came along, and so he got the brunt of that in addition to what he did on the farm bill.
I think that's probably right. Andrew in Essex County, you're on WNYC. Hi, Andrew.
Good morning, gentlemen. How's everyone today?
Good, thank you.
I'm calling with a two-part comment with a question at the end. The first is I'm curious whether these two gentlemen are familiar with and are, in fact, a part of the movement called the States' Rights Movement and their activities with regard to calling for a convention of states regarding specifically the Constitution. And secondly, I wanted to share an anecdote on a little meeting I was participating in as a bystander, kind of these folks who support states' rights in the Convention of States, and it was specifically dealing with government regulation and that they wanted less of it. But first the question, is that what you guys are doing?
No, I'm not part of that particular movement, as Tom Kaine. I don't know, Bill, are you? I don't think so.
No, I'm not. I think a constitutional convention is a precarious endeavor. It opens up everything. I don't think we need to open up the whole Constitution. We might need to amend the Constitution to make things work better, but we don't need to change the whole Constitution.
Alec in Tarrytown, who says he was a reporter when Governor Kaine was in office and wants to back up this call for getting rid of excessive regulation. Is that right, Alec?
That's true. I was a reporter in the 1980s, and Tom Kaine was probably the most popular governor. He was moderate. He was intelligent. I never forgave him for becoming a college president and not going to national office, frankly. But I want to say that I'm delighted that they're onto this common good. I've been reading Philip Howard for a long time. And, you know, you say...
And we should say that Philip Howard, who's the co-chair of this with Bill Bradley, is kind of the force behind it. And he's been a guest on this show multiple times, too, trying, from his perspective, I think it's accurate to say, to try to cut red tape, cut bureaucracy in government, make government much more effective, mostly for the cause of making government credible and fighting off the right-wing attempt to discredit government and destroy government. But, Alec, go ahead.
You're correct, but what I think I disagree with you on a little bit is that the focus on what's going on in Washington and in the Senate and the Congress misses the point that what Governor Kaine and Senator Bradley are talking about happens every day, and I deal with it. Since I left television news, I've been dealing with it, trying to do development, housing development. You know, there's a project, for example, that's been floating around now for 10 or 12 years. Finally, it has its permits. I don't know when it's going to happen, but it's going to produce 1,000 megawatts of renewable power from Niagara Falls to New York City. It's called the Champlain-Hudson Power Express. You never hear about it. Why isn't that in? I mean, that would be saving thousands of tons of electricity, much more than all of the solar that's been put on all the roofs in New York, you know? And yet they can't get it done because of all the bureaucracy, the EISs, and the political shenanigans.
Right. I think there's political opposition to that for various reasons. But Governor Kaine, you want to say anything to Alec?
Yeah, Alec, nice to hear from you again. It just gets – this stuff gets into his project, gets into projects I'm interested in, that Bill's interested in. It's the lack of common sense. It's the idea that why do you have to take 10 years to do something that should take 2 years to do? And it gets into my old profession. I'm a school teacher by training, and it gets into the schools. I mean, you can't – you know, I remember when I was a kid, I used to have wonderful playgrounds. I had things like seesaws and jungle gyms and slides. Well, they're not there anymore. They've been regulated out. And playgrounds are not fun for kids anymore. They don't like them after they get past the age of about 3 or 4. Teachers can't if a child's crying, a teacher's got to run around him in a circle because the law is you can't put your arms around the kid. Even if he's 4 years old, he just needs a hug. There's just all sorts of problems.
Are you really on this playgrounds are too safe to be fun anymore thing?
Yeah, I am. I think we regulated out a lot of the fun, and so that's why kids don't want to go there anymore. I mean, listen to your kid. They don't want to go to playgrounds because they're not – where's the seesaw? Seesaws were fun. And yes, there's an element of risk in everything in life, but you got to also have activities that kids want to do. There's risk in life, and there's risk in that.
Senator Bradley, let me ask about a parallel between yesterday and today, in a way. Some of my listeners certainly remember that in 2000, when Al Gore was running in the Democratic presidential primaries after 8 years as Bill Clinton's vice president, you were the alternative Democrat that year running to his anti-establishment left, if I can label it that way. How would you compare your campaign then to Bernie Sanders' campaign this year?
Bernie's was more successful than mine. he won a lot of states. I think it's the same impulse. The impulse is to make change. And I think that since 2000, the inequality in the country has increased. Since 2000, we've had large banks who've dominated the whole legislative process and not fixed the problem of 2008. Money in politics, which was one of my big issues in 2000, is never a bigger problem than it is today. And I think Bernie caught this wave and promoted it. And I think that that's what I tried to do in 2000. So there are some similarities. And quite frankly, I think the area that I focus on most would be the role of money in politics. Because what happens is you get all these regulations written in. You get various interest groups that benefit from the regulations, like the farmers in the example I gave earlier. And they make political contributions to candidates, and the political contributions then dissuade common sense politicians from taking a decision that would be in the public interest. So there's a relationship here between excessive regulation and the role of money in politics.
How enthusiastic are you for Hillary Clinton at this point? I assume you're for Hillary Clinton.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that this is an election of great importance in this country. I think we have one candidate who is basically a candidate of fear, and we have another candidate that is, in my view, the candidate of hope. It's as simple as that. And, you know, I think Hillary is someone who actually believes what she was taught when she was a young girl growing up as a Methodist, which is do as much good as you can for as long as you can for as many people as you can in as many ways as you can. And I think that's the core of who she is. Donald Trump troubles me. He's erratic. His temperament seems to be one that I wouldn't want to be the one with the finger on the nuclear button. There's no appreciation of nuance. I understand what he's done, and I think that in some ways he speaks for a lot of people in this country who are basically afraid. They're angry, but behind the anger is fear. Fear of economic change, fear of the Browning of America, fear of social change with women and gays, and fear of terrorism. And so he speaks to that those fears. And so people say, we want change. Okay, well, you know, I could have change by shooting myself in the foot. That would change my way, the way I walk, but that's not the wisest thing. And I think that's where we are today in this campaign.
Governor Kaine, as a moderate Republican, if that's a label you accept, are you voting for Donald Trump?
I don't know yet, honestly, because I don't agree with him on a number of issues. But it's sad, honestly, this election, because I think so many people are going to go to the polls and vote for what they consider the lesser of two evils, which is the wrong way to vote. But I think to get back to our topic, it's people are fed up with government. And the amazing thing to me, I'm a historian by training, and the amazing thing to me is, first of all, Trump accomplished something incredible, never been done in this country before. I mean, he got nominated basically without the support of even a state assemblyman or a mayor, anything. I mean, he beat the whole party, and my view is that if it hadn't been for the loyalty of the African-American community to the Clinton family, then Bernie Sanders would have won. And in that case, you would have had a Republican who's never hadn't been much of a Republican and a Democrat who'd never been a Democrat running against each other. And the sign to me is that there's something deeply wrong in this country to a lot of people. And whoever is the winner this time has got to understand that, deal with these people who are fearful of their job losses, worried about the country, and addresses some of those concerns, which I don't think, I don't know if either candidate truly understands the depth of that problem and looks at ways to address it.
You know, a lot of Democrats look at Trump triumphing over that whole field without even the endorsement of one assemblyman or whatever, as you put it, but then they ask, what has happened to Republican America? And they don't mean the politicians. They mean the Republican people of America, that they would choose Donald Trump, who they associated with racism and xenophobia, as their nominee, including by an overwhelming margin in New Jersey.
Well, you can say, you know, you can say a number of things about Donald Trump. I've known him for 30 years. He's not a racist. That's just not true, and not his life. But he's said some things that I wish he hadn't said. and continues to do so. But I think it's not the Republican Party. It's the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, which were challenged seriously in both cases. And as I say, I think somebody's got to address those concerns. It's a lot of Americans. Trump was speaking to a large portion of people, as was Bernie Sanders, and that there are parallels of agreement between the two.
If he's not a racist, would you say at least that he's pandering to racial and ethnic hatred and religious?
Again, you definition of what you mean. I mean, you say he's criticizing Mexicans. Mexicans aren't a race. I've just never, the time I've seen him work in New Jersey, he's never shown any in his employment practices and anything else. I don't think he's ever been challenged on the grounds that he was still doing it because of race. No, I think there are a lot of things you can disagree with Donald Trump on, but without going that direction.
Well, I was asking if you think he's pandering to, let's say, national origin, if you don't want to call Mexican.
Well, he's very definitely gone after the immigration issue, and the largest immigration issue is the immigration issue is coming across the Mexican border, and that's a concern that's very, very heavy in the American psyche right now, and it's compounded by a fear of terrorism coming across the border. And
but the way he's put it about Mexicans and about
my problem is I deeply disagree with him on that issue, on the environment, and a number of other issues, and that's why I haven't formally backed him. But I'm just saying you can criticize him on a number of those issues, but I don't think you can call him names.
Anything you want to add to this thread of the conversation before we leave it there, Senator Bradley?
Yes. So I think that if you recall early in the campaign where there were some protesters and he said, get them out of here, right? And there was violence that ensued. And I think he's saying generally, get what we don't like about current America out of here. And we means people who are fearful. And I think he's used the words politically incorrect as a magnet to attract all the feelings that people have about the changes that I mentioned earlier. And I believe that in doing so, he is able to create enthusiasm from people, and that's unfortunate. And I think we just have to think bigger. I mean, as Michelle Obama said, when they go low, we go high. And I think going high is what politics should be all about. And I think that in this campaign, Trump, unfortunately, has gone low.
Okay, Bill Bradley, last question. Can Phil Jackson make the triangle offense work for the Knicks with his new players, or has the NBA just moved on to more of an individual game?
That's not my question. I know who that's for.
Tom, you want to take that, Tom?
I wouldn't dare.
I think he has a better chance this year than he did last year. I like the moves he's made with the players, and I think the triangle offense is not complicated. It seems complicated. It's just maximum movement and spacing on the floor and hitting the open man. It's not something we didn't do in the 1970s.
Former New Jersey Senator Bill Bradley, former New Jersey Governor Tom Kaine, both involved now with a campaign called Who's in Charge Around Here, part of a larger bipartisan organization called Common Good that's trying to improve government by cutting through bureaucracy. Thank you both very much for coming on.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.